Hey guys, thanks for tuning into the video today. I just wanted to give you a quick message before we get started. If you enjoy this channel and want to see it continue to grow, the absolute best way to help me do so is to one, hit that subscribe button. It's totally free, so definitely helps out the channel and I appreciate you hitting it. Two is sharing this with your friends. This is a people-driven show. You are what drives this show forward, so every time you share it with your friends, it's that many more eyeballs that this show can get in front of. All that said, I highly appreciate you tuning in today, so definitely enjoy the video. Yo, what is up YouTube? T-Hatch coming back at you with another video. Today we are going to be talking about the Utah Jazz and their Game 7 versus the Denver Nuggets and how that unfortunately didn't go good for myself, a Utah Jazz fan. Not just going to be talking about Game 7 and this playoff series that we just went through with the Jazz and the Nuggets, but also going to be talking about the Utah Jazz's future and potential moves that they could make to truly build a team around Donovan Mitchell that can actually contend. I was going to say excited to talk about this, but I'm not excited to be talking about the Jazz getting kicked out of the playoffs. But I do think there's definitely some interesting things to talk about here. So first thing I want to do is kind of recap this Game 7 that we just went through, this playoff series that we just went through, because really I think this is going to go down in memory, at least with basketball fans that are, you know, in the world watching basketball right now. This is going to be a series that people remember for a long time, the duel between Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray, both of these guys really exploding and showing that they can be the cornerstone of great playoff NBA offenses. Obviously, Jokic was a huge part of that for Denver, and we can't discount what Rudy Gobert did for the Utah Jazz on both ends of the floor, especially last night in Game 7. I think the Jazz would have been absolutely lost if it was not for Rudy Gobert really picking it up on the defensive end for a lot of those possessions, helping bring the Jazz back into the game. That combined with what Donovan Mitchell was able to do on the offensive end made that a game that was down to the wire. It literally came down to Mike Conley missing a tough three for the win. So it was a tough, intense game. At one point, the Nuggets were up over 20 points on the Jazz in the first half. Really was a disastrous first half for the Jazz. Donovan Mitchell only attempted, I think, 4 or 5 shots in the entire first half, which, for those who are not familiar with this year's Jazz team, particularly after the loss of Bogdanovich, that's not how they play. Donovan Mitchell is the Utah Jazz offense. Donovan Mitchell does everything for the Utah Jazz offense, so to only have him attempt 4 or 5 shots in an entire half, that's just not going to get the job done, and that's what we saw in the first half for the Jazz, where they got absolutely blown out by the Nuggets. Come the second half, this is when we really saw Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert show the rest of the Jazz team that losing was not acceptable, that they were not just going to take this blowout and give up. They were going to come out, play hard, and ensure that the Jazz were in position to win that game. And they did get him in position. Unfortunately, they weren't able to win the game. The third quarter specifically, I think Rudy Gobert was excellent. This was probably the stretch between probably 10 minutes left in the third quarter through maybe about 3 minutes to go in the fourth. That's probably the best stretch of basketball on both ends of the floor that I have ever seen Rudy Gobert play. I think that was the absolute best that I have ever seen Rudy Gobert. On the defensive end, he was stopping Jokic like it was easy, like it was nothing. Didn't really matter what the Denver offense wanted to do. The Jazz were doing a great job of funneling everything that they were trying to do down to Gobert. They were doing a great job of getting the ball away from Jamal Murray, which was huge for the Jazz in Game 7, because obviously he had been torching them multiple games previous. So you're getting the ball out of Murray's hands. If Murray does have the ball, you're funneling him toward the paint where Gobert can get a good contest. Donovan Mitchell, I believe, played excellent defense on Murray. I believe Royce O'Neal also played excellent defense on Murray. So you put yourself in the spot to do everything that is necessary to be able to win that game. You get down to the end of the game, Gobert continues the heroics, Donovan Mitchell is getting absolutely beat up by that Denver defense because obviously he's the only offense that the Utah Jazz have, so you have to send Donovan Mitchell out there to drive toward the rim against a team full of gigantic players who are trying to beat him up on every play, and know that if Donovan Mitchell is not taking that shot, the efficiency of that offense drastically drops. Unlike Denver, where even if Murray's not taking that shot, you still have Nikola Jokic to be taking shots and creating offense for your team, so it's not as catastrophic as it is for the Jazz when the ball gets taken out of Donovan Mitchell's hands and he's unable to be that guy. Coming down the stretch in the fourth quarter, the Nuggets did an excellent job of denying Mitchell the ball, constantly denying him the ball. Whoever was defending Mitchell was picking him up in the backcourt. They were doing everything that they possibly could to deny Donovan Mitchell the ball, and overwhelmingly they were successful. Donovan Mitchell did get some good possessions there. His offense did keep the Jazz in the game in the fourth quarter. Really some heroics how he was able to score over that Denver defense on some of those possessions. At the end of the game, you saw that really sending one guy through a pick and roll at four defenders is not a way to win playoff basketball. And that's unfortunately what happened to the Utah Jazz, because while, yes, singular heroics can come from these players, Donovan Mitchell can will you into the game, but can you depend on that type of offense to score one key bucket that you need to win the game? Well, Donovan Mitchell had that opportunity to get that one key bucket to tie the game in this case. And going down the lane, four defenders converge on Donovan Mitchell. And a lot of times what's going to happen when four defenders converge on one guy, the ball's going to get coughed up. And that's exactly what happened. Donovan Mitchell coughs up the ball, goes down to the other end. A miraculous stop by the Jazz defense. I was highly surprised that they were able to get that stop. Ball comes down toward the other way. Conley gets a shot from three. I mean, he's dribbling up the court. He's got 2-3 seconds left. He's got to heave it from three. It's in, it's out. And the hopes and dreams of Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, and all Jazz fans were crushed in one moment. That said, obviously, this Jazz team was not a championship contender. No one in Utah feels like they're getting robbed of a championship by one shot. Not the case. Both this Nuggets team and this Jazz team were likely to get taken out of the playoffs by the Clippers in the next round. So it's not necessarily that you're missing out on something huge, but for Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert willing the Jazz into that game, it's really tough for them to lose that game. And of course, it's tough as a fan to be on the edge of your seat every second of that game and lose it right at the end. Obviously, on the other side of things, there are Denver fans feeling elation in that moment and super excited. So congrats to you guys. Your team pulled out the victory in the series. But really, the duel between Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray showed me, in my opinion, less about those two specific players, because I think what we can come away with for both of them out of this series is that they are legitimate offensive superstar level guys. You just need to put the team around them to help them have success. Murray has the better team around him because, well, let's face it, the other guy on the team is the guy you're building around, Nikola Jokic. So your two guys already, arguably a better duo than the duo of Mitchell and Gobert. I would say out of all four of those players, I would pick Mitchell as the best, but I may be a little biased there. But for Denver, a team that does have that second bona fide star who can get it done on offense, although he does have his troubles on defense where Gobert does not, But having that second offensive star, not just second offensive player, second offensive star, is huge. Then you throw in that you've still got guys like Michael Porter Jr. who can get buckets. We know Bol Bol is going to be coming in the future, although that didn't play a big role in this series. In years to come, Bol Bol will be huge for that Denver Nuggets team. Combine on top of that, you've got guys like Jeremy Grant, Paul Millsap, who are able to come out there, play defense, hit threes on the other end, and you combine that roster together versus what was there trying to help Mitchell and Gobert, which is Mike Conley, who is now, I think it's not arguable at this point, he is less than who he used to be. He is declining. So you've got a declining Mike Conley. You've got Joe Ingles, who, you know, Joe Ingles is a really good player. I like having Joe Ingles on that Jazz team, but if he's your third best offensive player, that's a bad spot to be. No offense to Joe Ingles. He's a good pick and roll player. He's a good passer. He's a good three-point shooter. He's a good defender. He's not a third option. Now, obviously, things are a little different. If you've got Bogdanovich, all of a sudden Ingles is that fourth guy. But is Ingles even a fourth guy? I have my doubts. You put on top of that that you're giving heavy playoff minutes to guys like Georges Niang. You're playing Juwan Morgan in a game seven, that's a terrible spot to be. When your final five out there on the court is Donovan Mitchell, Mike Conley, Royce O'Neal, Joe Ingles, and Rudy Gobert, yikes. I mean, I guess you have the option to throw Jordan Clarkson in there, but what are you getting with Clarkson? Are you getting the guy who's going to go off for an efficient 20 points, or are you getting the guy who's going to jack up enough shots to do that, but make basically none of them? Well, we saw last night, Jordan Clarkson was the second guy, the guy who made basically none of them. So this Jazz team was just not deep enough to give Mitchell the help that he needs. And even at that, they don't have the top-end talent either. So this is a middling Jazz roster that was hoisted to where they are by the talent of Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. And if you're not able to put the guys around them, then things are going to start getting bad really fast in Utah, because you look at the situation that they're in with Gobert and Mitchell. Obviously, you do still have Mitchell under team control for quite a few years. He still has an extension coming up in the pipeline, so that's going to keep him on the team for a while, assuming he doesn't request a trade, which we'll talk a little bit more about here soon. With Gobert, the real issue is you're creeping up on the day where you're going to have to offer him a supermax contract. Gobert has earned a supermax contract, and of course, if you're an NBA player and you're eligible for a supermax contract, what do you think you're going to demand when negotiations come around? It's going to be the supermax. That's what Gobert is going to want, and frankly, from his perspective, he deserves that. So it puts you in this really, really, really tough spot where beyond that Gobert extension, at that point, Mitchell's already going to be on his extension. Your cap space is kind of done at that point. So you have to do all of your roster construction, all of the talent addition that will come from free agency and large money acquisitions needs to happen in the next year or two if your plan is to move forward with Mitchell and Gobert. What does that look like? Gosh, with this free agency class, with this draft class, I honestly don't know what the Jazz are going to be able to do. Now, if you're confident that Bogdanovich is a number two scorer on a championship team, which I have my doubts, I think he would be one of the best number three guys on a championship team that maybe we've ever seen besides, you know, guys like Chris Bosh. But as a number two, I don't know how much I can trust Bogdanovich with that spot. Now, that said, I love Bogdanovich. I love having him on this Jazz team. I think he fits the team perfectly. I think his role fits Quinn Snyder's system perfectly. So I love having him there. I just don't think he's the number two offensive player on a championship team. Obviously, Gobert is never going to become that guy, even though he has shown improvement this year on the offensive end. And especially in the playoffs against Denver, he showed that when he wants to be, he can be dominant on the inside, especially in the fourth quarter at the end of that game. Gobert was willing buckets that we would have never seen from Gobert in the regular season. He was willing rebounds off of this Denver team in a way that it looked like a cat playing with a mouse out there. He could have whatever he wanted on the inside. So are we going to see a little bit more of that come out in some of these regular season games from Gobert? Can he get to a consistent 20-point guy? Because if you look at this team, if you're getting the contributions that you already are out of Mitchell, if you're getting 20 points plus out of Bogdanovich, if you're getting 20 points plus out of Gobert, there's actually not a ton you would have to add to that team to at least be competitive. You know, could it be Mike Conley actually playing like the Mike Conley that the Utah Jazz thought they were getting? If all those things trend good, then you're in a pretty good spot if you're the Jazz. At that point, your offseason plans would really just be, how do we fill out the depth on this roster and make sure that we don't end up in another situation like we were here, where Georges Niang and Juwan Morgan are getting legit minutes in a game seven. That just can't happen. You cannot have guys like that on the floor on a game seven in the NBA playoffs. You're going to get eaten alive, and that's exactly what happened to the Jazz out there. You notice in the second half, you didn't really see Niang or Morgan or any of those guys. The Jazz were basically down to a seven-man rotation. So if those things all trend well for the Jazz, yes, you could just add depth to this roster, run it back for another year, and say, we believe in these guys. But there are times throughout this playoff series where you could see it on the face of Donovan Mitchell, just that kind of, I'm here alone, it doesn't matter how much I do, it's not going to translate to us getting a victory because I can't overcome the lack of talent on this roster. And at times it seemed like Donovan Mitchell was just yearning for that one possession off where he doesn't have to feel guilty about taking a possession off because he can hand it to another player who can go get a bucket, who can run efficient NBA offense. He just hasn't had that option since the bubble has started here. And again, is Bogdanovich really that guy where it's completely guilt-free for Donovan Mitchell to take a possession off? I don't necessarily think so. So that leaves you in a position where you say, okay, maybe this is an offseason where the Jazz need to seriously look at some major changes to this roster and bringing in some different types of talent to play with Donovan Mitchell. So I've actually put together quite a few potential trades that the Jazz could make in the offseason to give themselves a shot of correcting this situation that they found themselves in. So what we're looking at here, I'm going to start with a little bit of an off-the-wall trade. I don't have a particular order that I have these trades in, but I found this one just an interesting idea. I don't know how in love with this all of the teams here would be, but these are teams and players that are rumored to be having some moves happening in this offseason. So I think at the very least, all of these GMs would be receptive to this proposed trade. Now, what is that trade? This is a trade between the Utah Jazz, the Portland Trail Blazers, and the Sacramento Kings. So this is a three-team trade. You'll see on the screen here what the Jazz would receive in this three-team deal would be Nemanja Bjelica, Corey Joseph, CJ McCollum, and Marvin Bagley III. Outgoing for the Jazz would be Rudy Gobert, Royce O'Neal, Nigel Williams-Goss, a second-round pick, and two first-round picks along with Mike Conley. So Mike Conley and the two first-round picks, which would be a 2020 this year and a 2024, would be going to the Kings, whereas the Blazers would be receiving Gobert, O'Neal, Williams-Goss, and the second round pick. So really the idea behind this trade is essentially the Jazz recognize, okay, Mike Conley's not going to be the guy we thought he was. This is essentially dead salary at this point. We can find other point guards that we would pay substantially less that can do what Mike Conley did for us this year. Obviously, that would be the Jazz deciding that they don't believe he's the guy they thought they were getting. But in that case, this is a potential trade here. Now, what's the idea behind moving both Conley and Gobert? Well, again, it's that supermax with Gobert, that pending supermax. And really the question is Gobert worth that supermax? Because right now at $25 million, I would say Gobert is worth that salary. What he brings on the defensive end and what I saw from him in this Nuggets series on the offensive end tells me that he is worth that amount of money. But once you get up to those $40 million figures, are we really going to give Rudy Gobert $40 million plus? Just, you have to internalize that before you just go ahead and say yes. Because while a rim runner and a rim protector does provide serious value on the basketball floor, are you getting in the most elite rim runner in the NBA, which is Rudy Gobert, are you getting $40 million worth of value versus that $5, $8 million center who can come rim run, who can at some level protect the rim? Is that difference in salary worth the extra value that you're getting out of Gobert? At $40 million, my personal opinion would be no. Again, that's going to be up to the Jazz to decide what they believe there, but I don't believe so. I think that would be a poor decision to try and move forward with Gobert in that instance. Now, I would question how good this Jazz team would be with McCollum and Bagley versus Conley and Gobert, simply because the defense would take a huge drop off without Gobert and putting Bagley in his place. Now, Bagley is not necessarily inept on the defensive end like a guy like Karl-Anthony Towns is, where you're just going to be getting shredded inside all night, but he's not Rudy Gobert, and he's not close. And, you know, for Jazz fans, that would be quite the adjustment going from the Stifle Tower to a guy where really you couldn't expect that great of things on the defensive end. Really, the move for Bagley would be saying, hey, we want a center who can really get it done on the offensive end. That's definitely Bagley. He can get buckets, and oh my goodness, the combination of him coming off of pick and rolls, pick and pops, with Donovan Mitchell and CJ McCollum being able to get him the ball, that would be a scary offense, but you would have to figure some things out on the defensive end. Obviously, you can see here that would project the Jazz losing 15 more games than they did the year previous, which would be a pretty tough pill to swallow, especially for a team that was already the sixth seed. I'd have to look at the standings, but I believe a 15-game drop would actually put them out of the playoffs. So that would be something serious to consider there before making a move like that. Going to move on to another trade, which is actually just a little bit of an alternate here for the Jazz to get their hands on Bagley. Now, this is assuming a reality where the Kings' new front office come in and say, yeah, we're not happy with Bagley at that second overall pick. We don't think he fits the direction our team wants to go. We think we need to rebuild. Let's see what we can get for the guy. If that happens, obviously a hypothetical reality, but if that happens, as you can see here, we've got Marvin Bagley III in exchange for Joe Ingles, Georges Niang, a 2020 first-round pick from the Jazz, and a 2024 top-five protected pick from the Jazz. So essentially, you're recouping the first-round pick that you spent on Marvin Bagley for this year's draft. In addition to that, you're getting an extra first round pick, and you bring in a veteran like Joe Ingles, who can help lead a young roster moving forward, who is going to need a high character veteran guy in the locker room. Obviously, that is going to be up to every front office on how much they value that versus a young prospect like Bagley, but just a potential option there if the Jazz don't necessarily want to go nuclear and blow up the team, but do still want to take a chance at a guy who may be available this offseason. That's one way to do it. Now, I'm going to move on to another trade that has been rumored quite a bit. This is just kind of my rendition of the trade, which is Mike Conley for Chris Paul. So in this trade, the Jazz would receive Chris Paul, the Thunder would receive Mike Conley, Ed Davis, a 2022 second round pick, a 2021 second round pick, and the Jazz's 2020 first round pick. So for this trade, really what this is the Thunder saying, yeah, it was fun to be competitive with Chris Paul for a year, but we think it's time to move toward the future, and we think some extra draft capital would be good for us to have moving forward. If I'm honest, I actually don't see the Thunder moving on from Chris Paul this offseason if it's for draft picks, and really, I don't see the player that would be good enough for them to say, yeah, we should trade Chris Paul for this guy, that another team would be willing to trade, obviously. I don't see really what the Thunder are actually getting here, unless they highly value somebody in the late first round in this year's draft, which with this draft class, I find that hard to believe. On top of that, they already have tons of draft capital that they got from the Paul George trade. So really, I don't see Chris Paul being on the move unless there is a young player that the Thunder love that becomes available, or a absolute cache of picks, which I just don't really see any team trading for Chris Paul, especially not the Jazz. I don't think the Jazz would give up more than one first-round pick in that deal. And to me, that doesn't make sense to either team, but a potential trade there. Next, I want to talk about a trade that has taken its sweet time to load here. Probably going to edit that out anyway. Here is our alternative trade between the Jazz and the Thunder. This one I actually could see happening in a potential reality, maybe not the one we live in, but this would be Chris Paul and Steven Adams along with two first round picks in exchange for Mike Conley and Rudy Gobert. Now, this would be an absolutely mind-blowing trade for the NBA world. I can't imagine what that Woj tweet would look like. but in this trade, essentially what we're looking at is the Jazz wanting to make that upgrade to a legitimate second offensive star, which you would have in Chris Paul, and being willing to make the downgrade of Gobert to Steven Adams in exchange for those first round picks. This is one that makes sense to me because the Jazz not only get that short-term boost that they need, but they also get some long-term security, and that is in exchange for the multiple-time Defensive Player of the Year, All-Star, super max level guy that is Rudy Gobert. The thought for the Thunder there would be, okay, you know, maybe we're pairing Rudy Gobert with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander moving forward, and that's what we're going to do. Again, much like just the straight up Conley for Paul, I don't necessarily see this happening because I just don't think that this is a mindset that the Thunder are going to be in. The Thunder are not a win-now team. They're also not necessarily a future-over-everything team. So at this point, a team that already has a cache of picks that isn't necessarily trying to go all in on a roster that can win right now, I don't really see the point in moving any of these guys, in shaking things up when you're coming off of an awesome year for your team. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is learning lots from Chris Paul, and Chris Paul really appears to be the perfect veteran to lead this team. He has fully embraced that mentor role, and if I'm OKC, I don't really see why I'm so hot to move off of that, considering that I've already got this gigantic cache of picks that I can use to go get guys that I need. Now, if somebody offers me 2, potentially even 3 first round picks for Chris Paul, of course you're taking that trade if you're the Thunder, but let's be real, who's doing that? Probably no one. So I'm going to move on to another blockbuster NBA news cycle destroying trade, which would be between the Utah Jazz and the Indiana Pacers. This would be the Jazz receiving Jeremy Lamb, Victor Oladipo, Doug McDermott, Miles Turner, and 2 first-round picks in exchange for Mike Conley, Rudy Gobert, Georges Niang, and Nigel Williams-Goss. Now, okay, Victor Oladipo, Miles Turner, and 2 first-round picks, that might sound like a lot, but the difference between Gobert and Turner is massive. When you put on top of that the risk that you are incurring by going for a guy in Victor Oladipo who's only going to have 1 year left on his deal, who's coming off of a major injury, who has only in reality had 1 year at that all-star level where everyone's saying, oh, Victor Oladipo is a legit player, a two-way guy. Now, I love Oladipo's talent. He's shown flashes of being that guy multiple years prior and since. But is he going to stay on the court? Is he going to consistently be that all-star guy? If the answer is yes to both of those questions, this trade would be awesome for the Utah Jazz. Because while yes, Miles Turner is not a Defensive Player of the Year candidate, yes, Miles Turner is not setting screens at a mind-blowing rate, but Miles Turner's a good player. He will come in and be a far above average defensive big. He's also going to be able to stretch the floor for you, which is something you did not get out of Gobert. And potentially with Miles Turner, that could hit the 3-point line. However, we've been saying that for years now. It hasn't really happened in an efficient way. So still waiting to see that. On top of that, for the Jazz, you'd be getting those 2 first-round picks moving into the future to help you add talent to that roster as you're growing. Now, a Pacers team that has Rudy Gobert, that has Domantas Sabonis, that has Malcolm Brogdon, is not going to be a team with picks in the lottery. So these are going to be mid-first-round picks, just like the Jazz picks are. But when you're adding multiple guys in that mid first round area, all of a sudden that bench that was depleted this year for the Jazz team starts to look a lot more full and like it's got a lot more options that you can go to when you end up in a bind. So I think that would be an excellent trade for the Jazz moving forward. And that would be if Indiana feels like hitting that abort button on this and getting away from Oladipo as your main guy. That's a potential option for both of those teams that I think would be pretty darn exciting. Now, I'm going to move on to a team that a lot of people probably are not expecting to hear come up in this discussion, but that's the Golden State Warriors. And that they may have some interest in bringing in Rudy Gobert to play the center position, catch those lobs from Draymond on the short roll. And this trade would look like the Jazz would send Rudy Gobert in exchange for Andrew Wiggins, Eric Pascal, the number 2 pick in this year's draft, and a 2026 first round pick from the Golden State Warriors. Now, the whole point of this trade, of course, is not Andrew Wiggins. Sorry, Andrew, that's just reality. This would be for that number 2 pick, because essentially you are guaranteeing yourself one of LaMelo Ball, Anthony Edwards, and James Wiseman. Now, in this case, James Wiseman does become a legitimate option at that number 2 pick, being that the Jazz would now need to replace Rudy Gobert. However, I would not really see a reality where the Jazz would trade Gobert just to draft Wiseman. The only thing that can make that make sense to me is they really want to avoid that supermax, but they still want to play a similar style to what they had, which is a heavy pick and roll offense. In that case, I could see Wiseman fitting into that, but I just don't see necessarily the upside for Wiseman on the defensive end hitting anywhere near that Gobert level, even if he will be an above average defensive player, even if he does have the physical skill set to be a great defender in the NBA. Is he going to be Gobert level? I think expecting anybody to be Gobert level is making a fool of yourself. So that said, you're probably making that trade in hopes that you're going to get either LaMelo Ball or Anthony Edwards to pair along with Donovan Mitchell. And both of those are intriguing options, but not ideal, because both of those guys are going to need the ball in their hands to be effective, which, of course, Donovan Mitchell does as well. Now, in a lot of cases, people would kind of pit this up to be a little bit of a problem. Oh, who's got the ball? You know, all this kind of stuff. With the Jazz, as I've explained, that's really what Donovan Mitchell needs right now, is somebody else he can give the ball to, take a possession off, and know that things are going to go well. That's going to happen with LaMelo Ball running that offense on those secondary possessions, secondary meaning not Donovan Mitchell. Same with Anthony Edwards. I would feel pretty confident that he's either going to get a bucket or at least get a good pass for a decent shot out of that possession. So that's something to look at there. That's something to consider. This is a more long-term option. However, I do think it also fills a hole for the Jazz at that starting small forward spot. At that point, let's say it's either Ball or Edwards. Just fill one of those guys in at the other guard slot next to Mitchell. You've got Wiggins, Bogdanovich, and then you just have to find a center. That could be a pretty good team depending on who you're able to fill that center spot with and if you're able to find somebody to back them up as well, because obviously getting rid of Rudy Gobert for the Jazz is not just getting rid of their starting center, it's getting rid of their only center. So that would be a big deal, is who are you bringing in to replace Rudy Gobert at that center spot? That would make the difference to me on that trade. Now, moving on to the final trade that I've set up. This is yet another trade involving the Minnesota Timberwolves. Obviously, lots of trades have been rumored with the Timberwolves since they landed that first round pick in the lottery. This trade does involve that. This is an interesting one. So it's a three-team trade between the Jazz, the Timberwolves, and the Pelicans, with Rudy Gobert going to the Pelicans to start alongside Zion Williamson in that front court, which would be absolutely scary. So this trade would look like outgoing for the Jazz would be just Rudy Gobert. Incoming for the Jazz would be James Johnson from the Timberwolves, Jackson Hayes from the Pelicans, a 2021 first round pick from the Pelicans, and a 2020 pick from the Timberwolves, obviously being the number one overall pick. For the Timberwolves, what the heck are they getting in this deal? They are getting from the Pelicans, JJ Redick, Josh Hart, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, and the number 13 pick in this draft. So essentially, what's happening in this trade is Minnesota can look at this and say, okay, well, I'm trading down from number 1 to number 13, and what I get in exchange is JJ Redick, Josh Hart, and Nikhil Alexander-Walker. Now, for a team that is building themselves around D'Angelo Russell and Karl-Anthony Towns, a guy like JJ Redick may fit into that perfectly, because he does not need the ball in his hands. Quite the opposite. He's most effective without the ball in his hands. So you can really be running your action between D'Lo and Towns. All of a sudden, teams are going to start losing Redick on the other side. You're going to be able to run him off of pin downs, distracting the defense on the other side, and highly raise the value of that offense that you're running in Minnesota. So I think Redick would be a perfect fit there for the year that he's on contract, and then on top of that, you're getting guys in Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Josh Hart who can play that shooting guard and small forward position, which are both positions of need for the Timberwolves. So essentially, this is saying we'll trade down from number 1 to number 13 to get a really good scorer who fits perfectly with our roster, and a couple guys who can grow that fit our team, as opposed to staying at number one and picking from one of the three most talented players, none of which fit with our team. So that's really the value proposition for the Timberwolves there. From the Pelicans' perspective, it's essentially saying, okay, well, would we rather have three shooting guards and a 13th overall pick or Rudy Gobert? I think they'd rather have Rudy Gobert. Giving up that 2021 first is like nothing for them, because they have a gigantic war chest full of picks there for New Orleans. So from their perspective, this is kind of a no-brainer. Yes, they do have to give up Jackson Hayes and a couple young guards, but let's face it, are you that upset about losing Jackson Hayes if you're getting Rudy Gobert? No, you're not. From the Jazz's perspective, you're getting that number one overall pick, so you get your choice of those top three talents. In this case, since you're bringing in Jackson Hayes, I don't really see them going with Wiseman at the number one overall, so you're probably getting Ball or Edwards. You're solving that second creator on the offensive end. You're solving your problem there, as well as you're solving the problem of what do we do at our center spot moving forward. You've got a young guy in Jackson Hayes who can grow into that. Now, I would recommend, even after making this trade, to go out in free agency and find yourself a veteran center who can come in and hold things up on the defensive end of the floor for your starting lineup, and let Hayes continue to grow and learn from the bench, where he can really spend his minutes catching lobs on the offensive end and catching his lumps on the defensive end. So that, in my opinion, may be the best trade for the Jazz long term, because you're going to get a true second option to go along with Mitchell. And in this trade, you're still maintaining Bogdanovich, so he doesn't have to be the second guy right away. All of a sudden, Bogdanovich can be that other reliable 20 points that you're getting. Of course, Mitchell's going to do what he does. And now the pressure's off a little bit on LaMelo Ball or Anthony Edwards, where instead of going to a team that didn't make the playoffs, a team that needs them to be a hero, they're going to a team that says, hey, we just need you to be a third option, be a change of pace when Donovan Mitchell needs a little rest. Boom, they can do that, no problem. So I think that would be a good situation for the Jazz to find themselves in, especially when you consider the only outgoing thing in that trade is Rudy Gobert. Now, obviously, that's losing your second best player. That's losing a multiple time defensive player of the year. That's losing a multiple time All-Star. That's losing Rudy Gobert, but you're gaining a lot. So if the Jazz decide to move in a direction away from Rudy Gobert, this would be a great option that would still leave Mike Conley on the table to be able to be traded. So this would put the Jazz in a good spot if they were able to pull this off. Who gets what picks, things like that, that's open to negotiation between these GMs. But that's a basic construct of what I think a trade between these three teams could look like. And I think that's pretty intriguing. That said, that covers the final trade option that I had for the Jazz. I'm actually very curious to hear what you guys have to say as far as potential trades that the Jazz could do this offseason, whether it includes Gobert, whether it includes Conley, whether it includes neither of them. I would love to hear your ideas below for what the Jazz can do moving forward to get better, simply put. All that out the way, I definitely appreciate you guys tuning into the episode today. As always, if you enjoy the show and want to see it grow, the absolute best way to do so is to simply share this with your friends. So all you need to do is hit that share button below, hit the social media that you want to share it on, boom, post, it's done that easy. And that helps me get in front of that many more eyes on this show. Obviously, I don't just talk about sports. I do talk about current events as well, which tend to get suppressed by YouTube's algorithm. So this is a people-driven show. You drive this show forward, and that's why I need your help. So definitely hit the subscribe button below. It's free. You don't got to do anything else. Hit that button. Share the video. You guys know what to do. It's 2020. So with that all out the way, I'm going to let you get back to the rest of your day. Peace.